This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.EDU. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in today. Two children are at play. They are sisters. They're playing, laughing, hugging, then poof. It seems murder might be in the offing. What happened? Research psychologist Terry Apter is interested in family dynamics. Her latest work has involved the bonds and the rivalries of sisters. Terry Apter says the relationship between sisters influences every other relationship a woman develops. On the program today, we're going to talk about the relationship between sisters with Terry Apter and her sister, Marion Quinn. Terry Apter is senior tutor at Newnham College, University of Cambridge, and the author most recently of The Sister Knot, Why We Fight, Why We're Jealous, and Why We'll Love Each Other No Matter What. The book is published by W.W. Norton. Listeners, I invite your questions and comments for our guests this afternoon. You can join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number is 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Terry, Marion, welcome.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
It's good to talk with you. To begin, Terry, would you introduce us to your sister, Marion?
Well, my sister, Marion, I knew from the age of 5, was a key player in my life, and I knew that other people didn't quite get that. I knew that my relationship with her was immensely important, that she was a companion, a protector, an ally, but she was also a competitor. And now, of course, we're great friends. I say, of course, that you can't count on that, because the envy that sisters feel for one another is very strong. It's primitive. It's something that we really have to learn how to deal with in order to be able to live in this world with other people who are like us, but who also need the same things we need. And my sister now, she's my older sister. We've gone through physical battles and, more indirect battles of competition. But I think now what I feel is that her skills and talents and achievements no longer threaten me. I have a kind of ownership of them, and I feel proud of them.
Mm. And Marion, what would you like to say about your sister, Terry?
Well, my sister for a long time in my childhood was just an interloper and something that was kind of like a flea on the back of a cat, for example, and a nuisance. And every now and then I did feel the need to assert my dominance over her, and I teased her mercilessly, and I feel horrible about biting her and bopping her on the head. But she's developed a wisdom and an articulate talent, and that I admire greatly. And she's become seriously my best friend, and it's just I love the way her book analyzes how this sort of relationship is important and how it can develop and evolve.
Yeah. Did the two of you do a lot of talking together about this book as Terry was doing the research, the interviews, and then doing the writing?
No, I didn't talk to her about the book. Although the book starts with a very personal position, mm-hmm. A lot of it is driven by a professional interest. I could see that in psychology, the parent-child bond was the one that was emphasized as playing the key role in development. That was what formed your personality, that was what encouraged or discouraged you. More recently, there's been a lot of attention on the way peers affect a child and her personality and her interests, but not nearly enough, in my view, was done on the way siblings affected your sense of self, your styles of relationship with other people, your sense whether closeness with another person was good or dangerous. So though my sister and I talk about a number of things, we didn't actually talk about this book. And as a matter of fact, it wasn't until it was published that I sent it to her, and I really held my breath because I think a lot of it surprised her, and I was very worried. The first few pages in particular, when I do talk about the enormous love and empathy, but also the terrifying envy I have felt in her presence, I knew our relationship was strong enough so that it wouldn't destroy it, but I was worried it would be a glitch, and I was very relieved when I checked in with her, and I knew she'd read at least the first chapter, and she was fine with it.
Terry, before I'm going to ask Marion here another question in just a second, but I want you to tell us the story of being with your sister. This is a story you tell at the outset of the book. She was 8, you 5, and she had some blood drawn.
Yes, that's right. Now, we were sitting in this medical center, and the nurse approached her with a prick of the needle or a syringe, and I felt weak, I felt dizzy, and suddenly the nurse turned to me and said, "Well, what's your problem? You're not the one who's getting the blood drawn." And I realized that I was so nervous about what was about to happen that I was the one who was shaking my hands, and I was the one who was on the verge of tears. But what I realized she didn't get was that it didn't matter whether my sister was going to be the victim or I was. The empathy was just so strong. And I found that, partly I tell that story because it marked my realization of the importance of the sister bond. But also as I listened to other people, the women I interview, would talk about what a close identification they felt with their sisters. Sometimes they were nice and friendly, sometimes they were hostile, but there was always a sense that this sister was part of me.
Mm. Marion, what was it like reading those first pages, the first pages of this book, The Sister Knot?
Well, I have to tell you that I was surprised. That was my first reaction. I wasn't aware of the sensitivity and vulnerability that she felt during that time. I remember a letter she wrote to me while I was away at camp, the first time I'd been away from home, and it was a letter that said, "I love you very, 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 very much." And she had covered the front and back of the page with "very." And at the time, I kind of tossed it aside, and I thought, "Oh, well, she's crazy." But I've thought about it a lot, and I'm bringing this up in the context of this experience of reading the first chapter of her book. She's a very sensitive person. She has an awareness of relationships that I really think I've only developed in the last maybe 25 years. I'm 61, maybe 30 years. And so she just has this sensibility that I found astonishing and touching.
Hmm.
And I this is Terry here, the psychologist coming in. What I found was, there was my own very deep response to being a sister, but when I heard the voices of the women I interviewed, I'm convinced that what I felt at that time is shared by many, many people. And one of the things that makes it so powerful, such a powerful relationship, is the complexity of it. Women in particular are often uncomfortable with feeling envious of someone they're supposed to like or being competitive with someone to whom they're attached. And that's one of the things that makes this such a a powerful relationship, the complexity of it. And I also think that that envy, I think when you look at sibling bonds, you get a handle on what it is that's going on when we envy someone. I think envy is really a fear that you are going to be annihilated by someone else's talents, charms, and achievements. And this is something you have to overcome as you define yourself, see that you are different from your sister, a real individual, and that you can thrive even when other people are like you and who get the admiration and attention that you also need.
Yeah, we can be threatened by the other person. We might be, you know, feel like we are inadequate.
We feel like we're not only inadequate, but that someone else is a better model of who we really should be. And that, as a child, as an infant, as a child, we're enormously dependent on our parents' love and admiration. You know, as an infant, we can't survive without them. So when we see someone else in our world who also earns that admiration and love and attention, we may feel, you know, she's so much like me. What if she's just so superior to me or so much better than me that I'm not needed at all and I lose my place in the world? And that terror coexists with thinking, this is a wonderful person in my world who is like me, with whom I identify, who is a playmate, but who also can threaten me.
Yeah. That idea of what's called the sibling trauma.
Yes.
What can is there anything parents can do to help get kids through this? There is enough love to go around here.
Yes, there is, and the parents know that, but the children have to learn that. I don't think there's anything that a parent can do to prevent any experience of this primitive terror that someone might replace you in the world that you need. But but parents can help assure the child that there won't be a replacement. Now, a lot of things that children do with their siblings can help them as well. They work very hard to look at a sibling and say, well, this is what you are, and I want to be a little bit different from you so that I'll be unique of my kind. And it's interesting that twins, for example, who are raised apart may actually be more alike than twins who are raised together. Mm. Because when they are raised together, each wants to develop a sense of her own unique identity, and so will work very hard to establish what can be called a contrast effect, to say, I am different from you. I don't want to copy you. I don't want to go your route. I want to be different from you so that it's very clear who I am versus who you are. Mm. And parents can help with that. One thing they can do is acknowledge that children are not the same, and so they shouldn't try to treat children exactly the same. Children have different temperaments. They have different needs. And so parents can, of course, work to be fair, but that's different from treating children as though they're exactly the same.
Yeah. Do you think the ability eventually to recognize that you are different from your sister, or that you're different from a sibling, plays a role in how that bond grows and how it becomes a good bond, a strong bond?
Oh, yes. First of all, it plays a very positive role in your development, because you realize that, though your parents, though some people will love you no matter what, you also have to go about earning love, and you have to go about defining yourself. And sometimes the rivalry with a sibling can be a spur to that. But also, because you empathize with a sister so much and appreciate her efforts and understand, you know, what she's up against and having also to deal with your family, and all families can be difficult to deal with at times, you can learn from her strategies. Many sisters say that, you know, it's been very helpful seeing how a sister copes with something. They can also feel protected. Mm. They also have an ally in the larger world. And they also have a much broader network of support and interest and people who are giving them feedback in many ways.
Mm. Marianne, Terry told that story about, you know, being very upset when you were having some blood drawn, you know, and she has that she, at the moment, you know, she had this very physical kind of reaction to what was happening, and also inside of her, and, you know, it was, if you hurt her, you hurt me. Do you have a similar memory of feeling, you know, empathy for your sister?
Well, that would have come much later when she was struggling against some of the ideas that our family had for what she should become. And I remember she wanted to go away to school. She was interested in literature. These weren't things that my family wanted for her. And I remember feeling knotted inside, hearing the fighting and the, you know, and the torment that she was feeling. But oddly, she and I didn't really talk about it at the time, but I do remember feeling very upset by it. And I think what happened as a result of it was not that I supported her. She didn't turn to me for support. I didn't offer it, that I recall, anyway. I kind of left her there, unfortunately, to twist in the wind, and then I redoubled my efforts to be the so-called compliant good daughter, doing everything everyone expected me to do. So when we were very little, I think that that type of identification affected her more than it affected me. She really was more of a nuisance and not something that I felt real close to at the time.
Pesky little sister.
That's pretty much it.
Well, I have a half-sister who I call really my sister, but she's much, much younger than I am. But I have three brothers, and I'm the oldest. So I, Marianne, I hear you.
Yes, I think there is that there is an advantage to being the oldest, and that the younger ones just do have to assert themselves and stake out their place. Where the older person feels more entitled, I think, the older sibling, just feels the entitlement.
Hmm.
Well, what I found was that, you know, most older sisters did say, I remember the day they brought her home, that, you know, suddenly my world wasn't my own world in the way I was sure it should be. But younger sisters also understand, you know, come to understand gradually that the older sister is a competitor and has to be contained, and they learn how to manipulate her, and they learn how to get her into trouble. I certainly remember using my sister's physical attacks on me as a way of I'd bring my wounds to my parents in order to get her into trouble. I also had some kind of revenge, which was part of the fun of our fights.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guests this afternoon are sisters Terry Apter and Marianne Quinn. Terry is the author of The Sister Knot, Why We Fight, Why We're Jealous, and Why We'll Love Each Other No Matter What. My name is Celeste Quinn, and listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions, comments. Maybe you've got a sister or sibling story to share. 333-9455 is the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. I remember being vaguely aware that I was going to have another sibling. There would be another child when my youngest brother was born. And my father told me I was going to have another brother. And I was so disappointed. I so wanted a sister.
Ah, yes, yes. I mean, I found that women who did not have sisters always wanted to find a friend who was a sister. Even without a sister, you have a very strong sense of what that relationship might be like, and you want to find it. And that may be one of the reasons that girls' friendships are often described in some way as being like a sister or being part of a sisterhood. Yet many women who have sisters often seek in their friends someone who will give them all the good things that a sister gives them, you know, someone to talk to, someone who can empathize with them, someone who is like them, but avoid the difficult things in the sister knot, the envy and the competition on the home front. So I think people who don't have sisters still want to find that relationship because it clearly is of such power and such value.
Mm. One of the things that you have written, Terry, in The Sister Knot is that sistering is as much and imagined as an experienced relationship.
Yes. Sometimes we have ideals about what a sister should be. And I think ideals can get us into trouble. If we think that a sister is someone who is just like us and with whom we should never argue, then you get an ideal of a perfect relationship, which is not one to foster the relationship. I mean, I've spoken to many sisters who say they have an on or off again relationship, and I think that's because when the good things are in play in the relationship, that's fine, but as soon as some of those less nice feelings rise up, they want to distance themselves. But also, we're fascinated by our similarity to other people whom we like and who are our allies, and we also need to be different from them. So we're always working with that idea of what a sister should be, whether we're a good sister, and whether a very close sisterly relationship is safe and supporting, or whether it brings us closer to that threat of envy that we'd so like to avoid but have to learn how to deal with.
Mm. Marianne, were there stories, books, movies about sisters that you remember and were helpful at all in terms of figuring out what it means to have a sister?
I have to admit that I am not as introspective and analytical as many in that regard. Certainly Little Women, you know, that's a classic depiction of the interaction of sisters. And I think with that, you're more struck with the intensity of the communication and the dynamic among the sisters. for a lot of significant part of my childhood and young adulthood, I really did not relate to Carrie. We were very distant. And
I didn't feel distant from her.
Oh, that's really interesting. But I really did feel distant from my sister. I was very busy with, I'm a physician. I was very busy with my education, and it's an all-consuming thing. That might be one thing. But the other thing is it's more in my nature, and it not so much now. And it may be because of the outreach that Terry has given to me that we have developed this friendship. But that has been, like I said, when you're 61 years old, a fairly recent thing that goes back 25, 28 years, that is, less than half of the time we've been together.
What I find is that I can't think of any, whenever I read a novel or see a film, it always seems to be about sisters. That's what I found when I was working on the book. I had endless novels and films to draw on. I think the creative thinkers, the playwrights, and the novelists always are ahead of the psychologists. And for a long time, whether it's Sense and Sensibility, when it talks about two contrasting sisters who nonetheless form a pair, and they can bear anything in their world as long as they have one another, or whether it's Emma, which I think is a very interesting, Jane Austen's Emma is very interesting in the way it shows how someone needs a sister and how someone will create a sister out of a friend, even though it's an unsuitable friend. Christina Schwartz, Drowning Ruth, they're all about that very complex notion of sisters. And, in that wonderful novel, The Color Purple, there's always the bit about how sisters depend upon one another for survival. There's nothing like an awareness that your sister has survived to make you feel that life is good. And the sister's willingness to look after another sister's children as her own and to protect them, I think these are very, very common themes in literature.
Celeste, this is Marian. I have to tell you, I don't know how I left it out, the Laura Ingalls Wilder books, the Little House series, in which Laura and her older sister Mary, I think, are beautifully depicted as rivalry and companionship. And I read those books, I think, the whole series three times, and I don't know how I eliminated that from my first comment.
Yeah. Well, Marian, I'm a different person from, I'm maybe a little closer on, if we were to draw a line, a scale, I might identify a little bit more with you than with Terry as well. And I think recently, in the last few years, our family has undergone some traumas. And it has been very interesting how that has changed my relationship with my brothers and my sister. We are much closer. It seems like there's almost a point where for a while you're going to grow apart because you're working on your life and there is a separation.
Mm-hmm.
And then you come back together, though, and it is always so good to hear that person on the phone say, "What do you need?"
Oh, wow. Yes.
Yes. Among the women I interviewed, there was sometimes a cooling off period, sometimes in adolescence for a variety of reasons. There are so many distractions in adolescence. and the rates of development can be very different, so that, you know, a younger sister can feel that her older sister is changing so rapidly. She's not physically the same person she was, and she's really going to be left behind. And then in early adulthood, when you're doing all sorts of work, trying to balance, you know, who you are, what you can give to which bits of your life, there is sometimes a cooling off period. But what's also interesting is that the story isn't always the same for the two sisters involved, as you can hear with me and Marion. Marion will say, oh, we weren't close, and, you know, she didn't really matter to me. And I can half recognize those phases, but it never felt like that to me. I was always interested in what she was doing. I was always, you know, both proud of it and threatened by it. And even when we weren't close in the sense of not talking very often or getting very easily irritated with one another when we did talk, I was always interested in what she was doing. It always seemed like a very significant thing in my world.
Hmm. Do you think that that has to do with birth order?
Oh, I think birth order is an extremely important feature of our development. And I think that, you know, psychologists are only just beginning to get a grip on how important that is. The individual differences, though, are so vast that it's difficult to come up with generalizations. But whether you have a bossy big sister or a protective big sister or a successful big sister, whether you have a little sister who adores you or whether you have a little sister who seems always to do what you've just done, but more quickly and better, and it's always threatening to, you know, run ahead of you. These things really affect our development.
Did the two of you ever talk about your mom?
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. I mean, this talking about our mothers was an essential survival tool.
This is Marion. Yes, it was. We really, I think, couldn't have maintained the degree of sanity we maintained without being able to discuss that.
I mean, in some ways, I think, you know, as an objective psychologist, let me say that, you know, as daughters, we were probably we've probably been unfair to our mothers. Daughters love to talk about their impossible mothers, but it's also understanding what's going on in the family. Sisters can be enormously helpful in terms of this. You know, this is how mom behaves. This is why she's doing it. You know, trying to understand it, also joining in criticism of it, as though you have an ally, you have a supporter, but you're not being disloyal. It's not as though you're going outside the family and complaining about your awful parents, who aren't awful. They're just sort of normally awful parents. And also, sisters were very good at protecting one another. I mean, let's go back again to the writers whose knowledge goes ahead of the psychologists. If you think of Jane Smiley's 1,000 Acres, she shows the way that the two older sisters who have been abused by the father are very adept at forming an alliance in order to protect the younger sister from the father. They make sure that the younger sister can have a normal teenage life, that they make excuses for her while she goes out on dates. They make sure that they keep her away from the father when they're worried that he will abuse her as he's abused them. And then, paradoxically, what happens is that the younger sister, the youngest sister, has such a different relationship with the father. She's actually able to love him in a way the older girls don't. And so she then condemns her older sisters for being disloyal to the father. And that was another thing I found in the women I interviewed, that sometimes, you know, well into adult life, when you're supposed to be able to be friends, you're supposed to be able to reflect on your past family history with some kind of pleasure and some kind of depth of understanding, sisters could often fall out and quarrel over very different versions of the family history. You know, how can you say that about my father, about our father? How can you be so unfair to mom? So, you know, anything that is sometimes that is often positive can sometimes have a negative punch.
Let's talk with a listener who's called in now, who's on line one on a cell phone. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi.
I have two new grandchildren, which are daughter, who are the sisters, and I'm looking forward to this would be an excellent book. I'd read it first, and then I'd pass it along to my daughter to help her. Is these various books that you talked about in terms of these relationships with sisters, is this also listed in the book in terms or not?
I didn't quite get that.
Yeah, the books that you were talking about that you read as children.
The novels, the stories.
The novels and stuff. Are these listed in your book?
Yes, they are. Yes, okay. I talk about the books, and I do talk about the Laura Ingalls Wilder books because, in fact, our mother read them to us, and I loved them because the younger sister was really the focus of the story rather than the good older sister. That's what I. But yes, I talk about the way in which those books, in very, very different ways, give us insight into the sister bond. Yeah,
well,
that's a good question.
Certainly get a copy of that for my daughter. I'm in the car. I've been listening to on and off. So anyway, it sounds like a great book for my daughter.
Oh well, delighted by your interest. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for the call. Other questions, comments are invited. If you'd like to talk with our guests, Terry Apter and Marion Quinn, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. How does an only child or a child without a sibling of the same gender develop an understanding of others, of what it is, what sisterhood is? Is there a different course of development?
Well, sometimes there is, sometimes there isn't. Often there will be other people in a child's life, an only child, or I call a singleton's life. It may be a cousin, it may be a friend of the family, and because the sisterhood or the sibling relationship is so common, it becomes is sometimes called a kinship, an atom of kinship. I mean, it's something you know about. Just as children who don't have a mother and a father living with them still know about that format of the family and think in terms of it, and are perfectly capable of developing very richly in many variations, they're still aware of what that basic format is. I think people without a sibling can still say, oh, I might have one, or it might be like this, or there are people who are close to me with whom I identify and with whom I compare myself and who in some ways can both support me and threaten me. So there's not necessarily a difference. But children with siblings do tend to have a head start in their ability to empathize in complex ways with other people. If you ask children to describe their friends, their parents, or a sibling, they'll use much more complex language in their description of a sibling's thoughts and feelings and characters, what they like to do, what they dislike, and why, than they're capable of using for either their parents or friends. they just see much more deeply into a sibling's soul. But I think this, the another part of your question is very important. What about, what if you have a brother rather than a sister? I think about 80% of what I say about sisters is true of any sibling pair. But there are certain aspects of sister to sister that make this particularly, to me, particularly interesting and particularly complex bond. And one aspect of that is that girls tend to be a little bit less happy about competing with someone they're also friends with. In our culture, with boys, competition isn't something that necessarily excludes friendship and support and sympathy. For girls, there's a fear that it does. And so that sense of I'm having feelings I shouldn't have can make it more complex. And also in girls, the fear of losing love is slightly more salient. I mean, boys have it, certainly, but it's slightly more salient in girls. It tends to last longer. And because that fear, someone else is going to replace me, and I'm going to lose the love I need, because that is a central feature of what we've called the sibling trauma, because that's more prominent in girls, the sister knot tends to be a slightly more complex thing to deal with.
One of the things that we haven't talked about that you write about that I found very interesting in the sister knot is when children become aware of others and that they have needs, and this is especially potent in within a family. Terry, before we have to wrap up, maybe you would talk with us just a bit about how children indicate this awareness.
They indicate their needs in all sorts of ways. I mean, they indicate their concern about a sibling by complaining about how much she has. can become, a dangerous signal might be that they become obsessed by what a sibling has, and they can't think of themselves or what they've been given or what they've achieved except in relation to a sibling. And that's a danger signal which parents can address by making sure that they give time to show this child, you are an individual. I can focus on you without any kind of comparison. And, you know, however many times you compare yourself to someone else, what you have is of absolute value. Mm-hmm. And that's what we all need to learn, but we also need to learn that in many contexts we'll be competing with other people who are like us. We need those other people. We want them around. And we have to deal with the reality that they may sometimes get ahead in some ways.
Yeah. And I guess celebrate those moments of sharing.
Celebrate the moments of sharing indeed. And learning to transform envy, the sense that your charms and talents and achievements are going to replace me, with admiration, that I can appreciate what other people are, and I can appreciate what I am as well.
Marian, you want to get the last word in?
Oh, I have no need to get the last word in. She's clearly the expert about this. Yes, no, I don't need to.
I was being facetious.
Oh, good.
I
know. Good.
But I had to be a smart aleck. I do want to maybe wrap up here with Terry's thought in the end, sort of here on envy. And I thought this was very interesting in terms of yesterday I did a program that involved women in American history, gender and American history. And so today, this afternoon, I'd like to wrap up with Terry's thought about envy. at this point in the cultural and historical shift in women's lives, when they are gaining power to claim the good things they want, when women's place in the wider world is less restricted, envy is less rampant, and therefore easier to confront. At this point in women's history, naming that envy and facing it may be feasible. I want to thank the two of you very much for joining me this afternoon and talking with us.
Well, it's been our pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Terry Apter and Marion Quinn have been our guests this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. They are sisters. Terry is a research psychologist. She is the author most recently of The Sister Knot, Why We Fight, Why We're Jealous, and Why We'll Love Each Other No Matter What. Marion Quinn is Terry's older sister, and she's a physician. And there we will leave it. The Sister Knot, by the way, published by W.W. Norton.